Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. In 2002, a little movie called Cabin Fever exploded onto the scene at the Toronto Film Festival and propelled its writer, director, and sometimes actor Eli Roth into the horror mainstream, but still an outsider. The films he's made since then include Hostel and Hostel 2, and now he gets to be a man with two films out almost simultaneously, Green Inferno and Knock Knock. Eli, so good to have you back.
Thanks, Elvis. Good to be here.
I guess you've got two films that are kind of inspired by other films, don't you?
Well, all my movies in some way are inspired by other movies. Knock Knock, very directly inspired by Death Game, a film by Peter Traynor that's a rarely seen movie that Colleen Camp had been in that she told me about. She said, I was in a movie where I had a threesome with Sandra Locke and Seymour Cassell. And I was like, what? And so I watched it with Nicolas Lopez, who was my co-writer on Green Inferno, producer on Aftershock. And we thought, oh, my God, we got to do an updated version. We loved the idea of the psychosexual thriller of the three characters in the house, of the setup of the two girls showing up, the guy having the threesome, and then it's like once you open Pandora's box, it's like
we should say to that basically a sort of a middle class artist who has basically sort of been marginalized in his own house.
Completely. No, it's true. I mean, it's interesting because people go, well, why did Keanu do it?
And it's Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves does an amazing job. You know, in all the movies he's never played a father. So I cast him as a dad, and he was fantastic with the kids, and he's really a great dad. He's a guy who's kind of repressed a little bit. At the beginning, you realize that his wife's not having sex with him, and he tries to do this little monster voice of, can't we have sex? And she goes, no, and she shuts him down. He's like, sorry. So, then it's Father's Day, and the wife is an artist, and her artwork just dominates the house. It's all about her. And then her catalog shows up, and I was like, oh, look at your catalog. Oh, they didn't get the color right, and she's going to have a big show. And he's the guy that's trying to be a good guy and trying to be supportive.
And he's an artist, too. He's an architect.
Well, he's
basically been shunted to basically the corner of the house.
Exactly. He's been completely relegated. He's the lowest man on the totem pole. And even on Father's Day, everyone's going to plan a trip to the beach, but he has to work, and instead of canceling it, the wife and the kids leave him. So these two girls show up in this rainstorm, and they come in for help, and can we use your phone, and can we go online and try and text our friends? Our phones died, or they got wet, we don't have the battery, and oh, yeah, can I use your Facebook? Do you mind if I can just write?
You should say they show up, too, soaking wet and looking like they just stepped out of an 80s music video.
Well, it's true. Well, I wanted a very stylish-looking film. You know, after Green Inferno, we went out into the Amazon with one of the most insane shoots you could possibly have, traveling farther than anyone has taken a crew, going on this kind of Werner Herzog, Ruggiero Deodato, like this insane expedition into the jungle. Thought I want to do something in a house, but also I wanted to shoot really stylish-looking photography. You know, my DP, Antonio Corcho, we watched Polanski's Death and the Maiden and certainly Adrian Lyne's Fatal Attraction. And I really wanted to do Fatal Attraction for the millennials. This idea that all that behavior in the 80s movies, maybe your wife found out, maybe people at work, but now with social media, there is no such thing as privacy. And that someone 20, 25 years younger than you is literally going to think in ways that you're just not going to think and take advantage of you. And in a strange way, I almost feel that the girls are a manifestation of Keanu's id. It's almost like they show up and they go, oh, no, we love your records and your long hair is cool and you are hot. You are this sexual being. And it's the whole theory of a free pizza that they talk about in the movie, that if you're a guy and you're alone at your house and a pizza just shows up at your door at 2 a.m, most guys would take the pizza if they could get away with it. So that's what these girls believe. They believe that all men are the same, that if you window dress them with a ring on the finger and the photos on the wall of the family and the kids, it doesn't matter. Basically, they're all pigs. If you're going to offer them the pizza, they're going to take it, and they're out to prove it.
It's funny you brought up sort of the id, because that idea of id and superego could apply to almost all of your movies. The idea of these people who come from middle-class backgrounds who are offered this chance to break out of the middle class, they're almost always punished for it.
They are. It's interesting. I'm very interested in the clash of cultures.
There's also a clash of classes in your movies, too. Like going back to Cabin Fever and the way these middle-class people look down on this place they go to.
It's interesting. Now that you point it out, because Elvis, you always know exactly what my movies are really about in a way that I could never fully understand. The kids in the movies always think they're smarter and better than the people they're going to, you know, they're interacting with. You know, in Cabin Fever, the city kids think they're smarter than the locals. And in Hostel, these guys basically think they can buy and sell these girls. You know, their prostitutes aren't enough. They want those Eastern European girls, and they're going to love us because we're American and we have money. And they become bought and sold. And then in Green Inferno, it's these kids that think they want to save the Amazon and want to protect this tribe and have this attitude of, we are your saviors. But the truth is, what they really want is to be trending on Twitter. You know, and they actually successfully shut down the protest and stopped the deforestation, but that doesn't matter. They're crying. They're really upset. The moment that they're ecstatic is when they're on the front page of Reddit. And that was my comment on this modern form of activism that I've been calling slacktivism, or these social justice warriors that get so behind a cause that they either know a little bit about it, but I noticed this kind of sanctimonious behavior that started really around Occupy Wall Street, where it was first this kind of watershed moment in culture, and then shortly thereafter, a family member, like a relative, he was occupying. And I was like, isn't he? How come he's occupying? He just got out of college. Things seem fine in his life. But him and his friends, they love to go occupy because, you know what? It's more fun than working at McDonald's. And you could get a Starbucks and there's lots of girls there. And no one could accuse you of not wanting to get a job because you're occupying. And then Kony 2012 started after we wrote the script. And there was this sanctimonious Twitter shame of every going like, don't you care about child soldiers? What's wrong with you? And it just, Free Pussy Riot, bring back our girls. Even after the tiger shark was killed, it was like, sharks lives matter was a trending hashtag. And for me, the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge was another one where it starts off with, let's raise money for ALS, cut to 2 weeks later, look at how hot I look in a bikini. It was a bikini contest. It was everybody was just trying to get followers. And look at my six pack, raise money for ALS. It was everybody just showing how hot they are. So I'm just kind of calling on all of it. I think that I understand that with Ferguson, I'd never know about what's going on if people weren't tweeting and hashtagging things and seeing what's going on. But I do feel that most people aren't interested in a cause to the point that they want to inconvenience their own lives.
But that's really the difference. So that's why I talk about this kind of middle-class bubble that exists in all these movies that you've made. People have to be...
These kids aren't a middle-class bubble. You know, you look at Lorenza Izzo's character. She's a privileged New York City girl whose father's a lawyer at the UN. And they have this... All these kids have some kind of hungering for adventure. They feel that they've been sold this upper middle-class or middle-class educated, protected lifestyle. And the cost of that is that it's very safe and very boring, and they want something dangerous. You know, the kids in Green Inferno, they really want followers. You know, you see Alejandro, this character, he's so happy when he's being arrested. Ariel Levy's just posing with his muscles and his sleeves rolled up. That's very conscious because that's his protest. All he's thinking about is making the blogs with that photo.
In effect, it's a selfie.
Yeah, exactly. So I find that the kids I grew up with who lived in this middle-class bubble, they never left, and they existed in a world where, you know, I traveled to Russia, I traveled to Iceland, I traveled to France. You know, I've lived in Chile on and off for the last 5 years. I love diving into other cultures, and I see the boredom and the kind of sadness of the people that signed up for a life that they were told they were supposed to have. You were told, if you have money, if you have a job, if you have an education and a family, this is what equates happiness, whereas I was always just trying to find what makes me happy.
It's a treatment. Probably the only guest in the history of the show to connect with Jiro Diodato and Werner Herzog is my guest, Eli Roth, who has two films coming out basically simultaneously, Green Inferno and Knock Knock. Obviously, with Green Inferno, because I saw you after I saw it almost 2 years ago now in Toronto, one of the inspirations was Cannibal Holocaust.
Well, I love Cannibal Holocaust. It's one of those movies that's reviled for the animal killings. And there's no way to defend it. I mean, Cannibal Holocaust and Cannibal Ferox were two huge influences. But it's interesting, you know, as I've talked about this with Quentin a lot, that the way that they killed, they did those
Quentin
amazing...
Tarantino.
Tarantino. The way that people did horse falls in the old days was a running W, where they would basically run the horse, pull a cord, and break the horse's legs. So every time you're seeing a horse fall in an old Western, they were killing that horse after. And if you're looking at a chimpanzee in a movie, the chimp is under 5 years old, because after five, they're adolescents and they're uncontrollable. And to get a baby chimp, you have to murder its entire family. And the chimps never forget that. So they're traumatized. So, yes, there's horrible animal killings in Cannibal Holocaust. But if you're really going to attack that movie, you really should look at every other movie that's using animals and the way they've been killed and abused, you know, historically throughout film. So in The Green Inferno, I let the animals run free and the people are basically treated lower than animals. But I feel that movies have gotten very safe, that, you know, it's really Tarantino and only a handful of other directors that are making these dangerous, edgy movies, either in terms of safety and how they're made or in terms of the subject matter. I also think there's this kind of idea that all characters have to be likable. You know, in real life, I feel like there's your friends and then there's people that you work with and people you just hate because you can't stand what they say. But you don't change what they say. They are who they are. So one thing, you know, these movies I did after acting under Quentin in Inglourious Basterds. So it changed the way I approached them. You know, Quentin would always say, I'm not there to impose my morality on the characters. The characters are the characters. Whether I like them or not, they are who they are.
I guess what I found really interesting about Knock Knock is this is the first time that you have somebody at home rather than going out. And it almost feels like it's this time in your life.
It is.
It's about the idea of having your home violated rather than having somebody go with this, what they feel like is an impermeable shield around them. They're protected by money and the idea that they're Americans.
We're Americans. You can't. Yeah. We're an American. Nothing bad could ever happen to us because we have America behind
or
us.
Or in Cabin Fever, you're in America. So
yeah.
Certainly nothing bad can happen to you as an American in America. But I thought this was really a sign of maturity that the first time it's about somebody being in the home and having somebody come and destroy everything that turns it into a home too.
Yeah, no, it is where I am in my life. I mean, I'm 43 and I've been married almost a year. And when you're younger, you have that wanderlust, you want adventure, you want excitement. And now I'm at the point in my life where it's not that I want to build up a wall and stay there. I still love exploring the world, but you're at the point where you're really building a life and you're saying, there's stuff that's more important than making movies or making money or success or all of the things that really got you excited in your 20s. Now you're thinking, okay, you're married, you want to have kids, you want that safe world that at the end of the day, you go, this is what's important, this is what matters. And there's something really terrifying that you could just accidentally, you know, let someone into your life that could unravel that just in a matter of hours over the course of a weekend. That's something that really scares me. So yeah, it's probably very reflective of where I am in my life right now.
I just thought that too, because often it's the older person in the movie who's the threat.
Well, what was fun about Knock Knock, I mean, I know that people don't often associate the words maturity and restraint with my films, but I thought about Peter Jackson after Brain Dead when he went to make Heavenly Creatures, and he said he very consciously made a movie with one kill. And I said, I'm going to do a movie where there's basically one drop of blood. And I wanted something that felt more like a chess game. If Green Inferno is a roller coaster, this is like you're in a very tense chess match where every move is calculated and thought through, and everything that the girls say, you have no idea what the real truth is. And whatever anyone's saying, it's completely irrelevant. It's what their feet are doing. And Keanu would say that his mouth might be saying, no, 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 but his feet keep saying yes. And it's all about the girls. Okay, step one is we got to get into his house. Now we got to look around the space. Now we assess it. Now we get deeper. Now we get him to take our clothes. Now one of us goes to the bathroom. Like, they have a whole routine and how they work this out and what they do. And I liked filming a movie that was basically close-ups and dialogue and people talking. And there's a whole sequence that I call the musical chair sequence, where for me it was about composing a beautiful shot, using the rain, using the color, using the depth, using the shadows, and letting the scene play out on the actor's face. And Keanu is not someone who gets credit for being a good actor. People know him as an action star, but you know he has a bad, you know, people say a lot of very unfair things about him as an actor. And I think he's amazing. I think he does such a good job at trying to hold it together as this dad. Like, he has this very uncomfortable smile on his face that it's this weird defense mechanism that he's using when the girls get closer to him and he gets nervous and he keeps moving chairs. He keeps smiling and like shaking and looking at the phone, hoping Uber's going to show up. But I also don't want the girls to be evil either. You know, there's a scene where Lorenza Izzo, who plays one of the perpetrators, kind of the ringleader, this girl, Genesis, she's at the mirror and she's at the wife's, violating, wearing the wife's clothes, using the wife's makeup while Keanu Reeves is tied up. And Ana de Armas, this terrific Cuban actress, comes out and she plays Belle, who's dressed in Keanu's daughter's school clothes. And she starts, you know, having this strange daddy fantasy, and it just all starts unraveling. She starts hitting him, going, why did you do that? Why did you do that? And you see Lorenza's character is just listening, kind of letting her rant, like not even flinching. And I don't want to overexplain it, but you just get the sense that these girls have had horrible things done to them, that they had no choice in the matter, and that they found each other, and this is their survival mechanism. So I want, by the end of the movie, for everybody to be uncomfortable. It's interesting. Who you root for in the movie says a lot about who you are and how you feel. Some people come out, they love the girls. Some people come out, they hate the girls. Some people agree with Keanu. Some people are like, that bastard deserved it. We screened it in France at the Deauville Film Festival, and a 65-year-old couple came up to us. And there's a whole bit in the movie where a joke Keanu has with his kids called Monster that he does. It's his little character. And the wife was like, I'm calling my husband Monster. It was like a 65-year-old French couple. I think they had sex after they saw it. So,
Eli Roth, bringing people together once again is the treatment. We're going to take a break. We're talking about his two new movies as director, Green Inferno and Knock Knock. There's more to come. Stay with us.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. It's always good to have an old friend of the show come by, Eli Roth, who brought two presents with him for the fall. It's The Fall of Eli Roth with Knock Knock and Green Inferno.
Hopefully it's The Rise of Eli Roth, The Fall of Eli Roth.
The autumn surprises of Eli Roth. Forgive my word choice there.
The season of Eli Roth?
Let's do that. I just think that these movies, both of them, still fall into that thing. There's almost always a moment where it feels like a moment of kind of spiritual death, whether the protagonist is looking for somebody to come and save him or her. That moment happens so often, almost like a moment of prayer in your movies. And the movies get really quiet at that point. And I've always wondered where that came from. Now that I can see it running through all the films that you've made.
It's interesting. With five movies now, you think you're making a completely different movie every time, and then you sit down with you and you realize you're just making the same movie over and over with different characters.
That's not what I'm saying.
I know. But look, I remember in Hostel, you know, everyone is there for the gore, and in that first torture scene with Derek Richardson, there's a moment you could hear a pin drop. It was dead silent. No one was enjoying it. And then by the end, people were screaming when Jay Hernandez runs over the girls. Like, people were standing in the theater, standing up out of their seats, screaming, pumping their fists. And that scared them, this idea that you could be so horrified by violence, but that it was within all of us that we could all cheer for violence and want to see violence. I like that moment. I like that moment where you can hear a pin drop in the audience. It means you've got them. And
Do you construct the movies with that in mind?
I never construct the movie consciously. I know that with a film like Green Inferno, I've got to get everyone engaged in the characters. You know, we all know what's coming. We all know what's going to be served for dinner. So I want to make everyone wait. And you dole out the appetizers. And then there's what I would call the walkout scene, which is that first big major set piece. And people say my movies are in two halves. I think of them as one continuous story. But there's that moment at the midpoint where if you've really made the audience wait, then they're thinking, oh, God, he's made us wait this long. Like, something really horrible is going to come up. Like, I don't even want to know what's coming up next. And you give them something that's so brutal and so unexpectedly awful, almost like the finale of the movie, to generally the nicest person. And it was Jordan Ladd in Cabin Fever, Derek Richardson in Hostel, Heather Matarazzo in Hostel 2. And the first one was Aaron Burns in The Green Inferno. And he's the nicest guy. And you don't understand why this is happening to someone we like so much. And what it does is nobody in the audience trusts you after that. They really feel like they're in the hands of an unstable narrator. And in Knock Knock, it was so much fun to have this, you know, this build up to this sex where you're just watching these girls play into Keanu and lather him up until he finally goes crazy. And the sex scene isn't a romantic thing. I wanted it to almost look like the end of Fire Walk With Me. I would call it my David Lynch sex scene, like disturbing, dark, animal, flashes of lightning, hyper stylized. And the next morning, that morning after, he wakes up and he thinks they're gone. And then he walks in the kitchen and it looks like two raccoons have gotten in his kitchen. And there's food on the walls and they've completely destroyed it. And the dog's on the table and eating out of the cereal bowl. And the girls are like wild animals. And instead of Keanu saying, God, you know, I thank you for last night because it really made me realize how unhappy I am with my wife. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think I need to have a talk with her. Can I make you guys breakfast? They probably would have left him alone. But the first thing he says is, I thought you guys left. Like, I want this all to disappear. Let's make this go away. And that's when they're like, okay, game on. This is, all right, really? That's who you're going to treat us? You're going to try and flush us away like toilet paper? Exactly what we thought. Watch this. And it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And I like making the audience uncomfortable like that. I like that moment where they feel totally, completely helpless, because if you've really done your job, the audience is going to think, no, this director is actually crazy enough to kill this person. I want the audience to believe, I actually don't know if this person's going to survive this, because this director is so sadistic and is so unpredictable that they could kill this person. Now, you don't want them. I always say that audience, they want to have their ass kicked, but they don't want to feel kicked in the balls. Like, I've sat through that movie where you're rooting for someone, and then they're just killed. And you're like, oh, come on. That's not fair, because I really like that person. So I never want to do that. But if you really do your job right, you can get away with killing some really likable characters and still keeping your audience to the end.
My guess was going both kind of visceral and eschatological as Eli Roth. We're talking about his new films as director, Green Inferno and Knock Knock. But I do find myself thinking about that moment, because I just had a bit of an Eli Roth film festival to watch all these things. And even here, when Keanu's tied up and he's just looking to be saved. And this, first of all, it's a really interesting thing to do, to cast somebody who generally is a person who saves people.
That was the fun, was we kept saying that here's Keanu, who always saves the world. This is the guy you're used to seeing save. So of course he's going to save the situation. But no, these girls are like 10 steps ahead of him. They're like, it's almost like Cat in the Hat. They're like thing one and thing two. Like, he can't control it. And there is a moment where Keanu's like, get dressed right now. And he was making these faces for like a second. He storms in and the girls just laugh at him. And it's like he's trying to be Keanu Reeves in a Keanu Reeves movie, and the girls just laugh at him. And you're going, oh, my God, Keanu can't even get out of this situation. There's no hope for any of us.
Was that your first conversation with him and about sort of saying part of the fun of this is going to be to play on the expectations that the audience are going to bring to you in this? And,
yeah.
And even in a horror movie, somebody like that, when he's tied up, you know, there'd be a cut to the piece of broken mirror on the floor, and he rolls over there and cuts himself loose.
Yeah, no, we talked about that. I talked about how the first 25 years of his career and my first, you know, three or four movies are all going to lead up to the expectations are going to play in very well to the movie, because people are going, oh my God, look what he did to those kids in Green Inferno. Imagine what he's going to do to Keanu Reeves. And everyone's like, okay, this is Keanu. We're used to seeing him save the world. What happens when he finds himself in an Eli Roth movie? And the whole idea is to play into that, but also subvert those expectations and give people what's generally a more fun experience or insane direction at the end. I mean, a lot of people are coming out of Knock Knock going, I had no idea the movie was going to go to that particular place that it goes to. But that was the fun, was, you know, playing off that, you know, we tried to find a way to have him scream his vocation. He plays an architect, because we're like, it's not a Keanu Reeves movie. He's like, I'm an architect. So we were there with him going, I'm an FBI agent. I'm a lawyer. That's what I do. Like, we talked about that all the time. And he's a very good sense of humor. And he was just coming off of John Wick. So Keanu was like, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone speak with such love as I have with Keanu Reeves talking about John Wick. Like, he just loves John Wick. And we didn't know what it was. So we were like, what is John Wick? I don't understand this. But he was like, oh, man, they shoot my dog and I go in with the elbow in the face and shit. And he just live acted the entire scene where he shoots 50 guys in Nicolas Lopez's apartment. And we're like crying laughing. And the first day, it was the scene where the kids give him the Father's Day gift. And it's his first scene playing a dad with kids. And he's like, kids, it's Father's Day. I was like, cut. And I was like, Keanu, can you try and say it like you don't want to shoot them in the face? Because right now you're really going John Wick on these kids and you're terrifying. I'm like, ah, screw you. All right. And the thing about Keanu is he's a great sense. I love him to death. And he doesn't do that all the time. I'm teasing him. He's such a funny guy and he's so nice and he's so easy and made himself vulnerable and available and like really, really whatever I wanted. And that rant, you know, I wanted people to come out of Knock Knock going, that's the best performance I've ever seen. That's the best acting I've ever seen from Keanu. And that rant he does about free pizza, where he's like, you guys should, that was in rehearsal. We had written a version and Keanu just started riffing off it. We couldn't write down fast enough what he was saying. And then when he does it, I remember it was the end of the night and it was like 5 a.m, we were trying to shoot it and he was completely out of gas. He had no more voice. And I said, let's pick it up tomorrow. So we started at like 8 o'clock and it was the first take and he just went for it. You can see his vocal cords straining and his eyes, this poor guy, you feel so horrible for him that it's we kept saying, this is your Oscar clip, man. This is your Oscar clip.
Because I've always thought of your films as being, all the gore aside, and people talk about this all the time, and I guess I never mentioned this to you before, I've always thought about them as being psychological films, where basically people are put through these things that force them to leave what they were behind. And I just think about that moment of begging when you just, they're all, at some point, they're sobbing almost, saying, please, just let me go.
Thank you.
So I can be that person.
I think that the blood stains the viewer's eyes, and some people never get it out. You know, they watch Hostel 2 and the red gets in their eyes, and that's the only filter through which they can watch the film. But you know, I think that when you see it again and again, the gore is going to wear off and there's got to be something else there. I think that what
makes... when you talk about films, when you're on TV shows or whatever talking about them, you're always talking about them in terms of the emotional impact they have on you rather than the physical aspects of the visual aspects of the scene itself. You're never just saying, well, they're doing this and this and that's really cool. You're saying, well, this is happening to this character and that. And
well, that's how I approach it. When you're making a kill scene, I say that it's not hanging someone upside down and bleeding them to death is boring. It's nothing. It's seeing Heather Matarazzo beg for her life that makes you upset. It's this guy, Derek Richardson, who's at this point in his life where he's hopeful and he's young and he's a little confused and he wants this or that. And then all of a sudden someone else is going to take it from him. And he's going, please, please, why are you doing this? Why are you doing it? It's seeing Derek Richardson's acting and knowing that character and caring about that character. And that's why it takes such a long time building up in the movies. I want people to know the characters. They might be irritated by them. They might not like them. But I want everybody to know them. And we talk about that with Nicolas Lopez, that we love pushing characters to their breaking point. And I think that actors love it too. One of the great things about, you know, horror movies and thrillers and putting people through these extreme situations is you can really see what they're made of and you can really see their range as an actor. You know, when you see them in a horror movie, you get to be funny and innocent and sweet and then really show this horrible crying. And my sense is that, you know, most actors have some kind of inner trauma or inner thing, whatever it is that they want to let out. My feeling is that every actor wants to do a scene where they're being tortured and they can just let whatever pain is inside them go. Like, it's like people are actors because they love it, but a lot of actors love that attention and that's filling some kind of void. And when you can really kind of tap into that, it's almost like you're doing a root canal and you hit that nerve and it just all comes out and they feel great after and they love it and they're so proud of it and they've done it. It's almost like actors, you know, they say, like Woody Allen would always say, comedians never get to sit at the adult table. They're always at the kids' table. I think that actors feel like they're not taken seriously as actors until they do a real crying scene or a real painful scene. You know, they can be funny, but until they do that dramatic moment, and the movies that I'm making will often offer them that scene to say, like, look at me, I can do this, I can go there. If I need it, I have that trick in my arsenal. And it's fun to write that. It's also fun to give new faces a chance. You know, Lorenza Izzo, obviously, she's my number one star because I wrote Green Inferno for her and we got married, but she's acting in her second language and I've seen her act in Spanish in Nicolas Lopez's Que Pena Tu Boda, which translates to F My Wedding, where she's with Aria Levy and she plays the bad girl. She's an amazing, amazing actor. She's these big, innocent eyes and she's so different in Green Inferno and Knock Knock. And so I'm happy people can see them both very close to each other because she's such an amazing range, but also someone like Daryl Sabara, who's so good in the Spy Kids movies as a kid, but no one has really seen him. I saw him in World's Greatest Dad. I thought he was amazing. Underseen film.
Yeah, I had Bobcat on to talk about that.
God, he was so good. Daryl's so dark in that movie that he's so good people thought that he was really like that, and he's not. And now you see him in Green Inferno. He's fantastic. And also people like Aaron Burns, who we know is a filmmaker from his movie Black Tino. And we were writing, Nicolas and Guillermo Amoedo and I were writing going, okay, Jonah's got to be like an Aaron Burns type. It should be like Aaron, like big, kind of heavy, like, oh, I really like you. Like this sort of joke that we would have making fun of Aaron. He's not really like that. He's probably the smartest person I've ever met. Aaron, we wrote it for Aaron. We cast him and he's brilliant. He was amazing in the film. And then so we wrote him into Knock Knock as well. So you know, it's fun to write these parts for these terrific actors and to find new faces. And that's what I think the best of independent cinema does, you know. You can take an idea that hasn't been market tested, where you don't have to cut the corners off of it to make it safe. You don't have to childproof it for anybody. You can really have an idea, write it, and there's no one telling you no, and you shoot it. Basically, the public will tell you whether they like it or not, and that's how it should be.
Well, a primer on an independent film, and we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming by. I really thank you.
Thanks, Elvis.
My guest is Eli Roth, whose new films as director, Thank God They're Finally Coming Out, are Knock Knock and Green Inferno. Our recording engineer here at KCRW's Kat Yeo, who also mixes the show. The show is edited by associate producer Blake Veit. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.